Begin the current daf Masech the Bava Basra daf Kuf Lamed Ches. Begin on the bottom of Kuf Lamed Zayin Amud Beis. Four lines up at the bottom of the Amud. The Gemara continues in the related discussion from the previous daf, discussing the halachas of matana of regarding a gift. So I'm reviewing the Mishmul. It says a case of nochas of la'achav. Someone writes over his properties to someone else. Va'amah halo yef shebehen. The other person, the recipient, says, "I don't want your gifts. I don't need it." Says Rabbi Yehuda Mishmul, Kana, in spite of that, the recipient has acquired the gift, and even if he's standing and he's screaming, saying, I don't want this gift, even so, as the Gemara will explain the reasoning for it, he has acquired it. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda, he says, no, like Kana, the person is refusing to receive the gift, and he's protesting, he does not receive the gift. Amar Ababa Bamamal, he says, Vilay Pligi. Actually, these two different Amiram do not disagree. As we continue on the top of Kaflam Mechasim and Alf. Khan, Rabbi Yechanon, who said that the person will not acquire it, is Bitzavech Mi'ikara. It was that he started screaming about it from the beginning. When the giver was giving him over the document to receive the gift, he started screaming. So that's why, says Rabbi Yechanon, he's not going to acquire it because you cannot be Mezaka, you cannot merit someone with a gift against his will. Which is a liability from, as the Pasuk says in Mishlei, the one who hates gifts lives. It's something that's detrimental for a person to have to receive a gift, as the Gemara says in Chulin Daf Mem Dalet Amud Beis. Now, moreover, actually says Rashbam, however, the giver cannot retract, because he already removed himself from it by giving it to the person. Rather, says Rashbam, it's actually going to be Hefker, and whoever wants to could go ahead now and merit in it, as the Gemara says, increases, Nav Chav Dal Mad Aleph, where, like Rish Lakish says, if someone gives a gift to his friend and he says, I don't want it, Kalamachzik Bazach, but whoever now takes possession of it merits it, as the Gemara there concludes, like Rish Lakish. But, says Rabbi Yechanan, the recipient, however, has not acquired it, because he protested from the beginning. Khan Shmuel, who said that even though he's protesting, the recipient will acquire it, is Toma B'Sheisik Mi'Karu L'B'Sleiv Tzavech. In the beginning, he was silent, and only later did he protest. There, everyone agrees to Shmuel's halacha that the recipient would acquire it because when he received the document of the gift, he was silent. That is that he showed that he was agreeable to receiving the gift, and it's only after that he already had gotten it that then he doesn't want to have it anymore. That it doesn't help to remove it from his domain by saying, oh, I don't want this gift, until he actually has to actively get rid of it from his domain by giving it to someone else, to being mafkred, but just saying, I don't want it, is too late because you were silent when you got it, that means to say you already acquiesced in the receipt of the gift. Now, Amar Abnach B'Yitzchak, he says, the following halacha which relate to this halacha that we just said. Zichaloi ali de'achar. Let's say the giver merited to the recipient through someone else. He said, here, receive this for that person, and this was done in front of the recipient. Now, v'shasak, the recipient, when the document was given over, he was silent. Or, it could even be talking about where a different person acquired it with a kinyan sudr for the benefit of this recipient. And he was silent. But at the end, after the one who received it for him now wants to give him the document, oh, now he starts to bitzaveh, he starts to scream. Says the Gemara, in such a case, we come to machlekes if, in that case, the recipient will acquire it or not, of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel v'Rabban. Why? The Gemara explains the time like Linda Brysa. Hakaisim nechasav la'achiv. Someone writes over his properties to someone else. V'hoyu b'hen avodim. Now, in those properties, part of the properties were slaves. And because of that, the recipient was screaming. V'amar halon, the recipient said, no, yef shben, I don't want your properties because I don't want to have the liability, responsibility of feeding the slaves. Because, as Rashbam says, even according to the pin who says that the master could tell the slave, I want you to work for me and I'm still not going to feed you, but still he doesn't want to have such a type of operation where he has to have slaves that he's not feeding. So he says, I don't want this. So says the Brysim, Imhoi Rabin Shani, if this second master, meaning the recipient of the gift, was a kayin, hare elo eichlim b'truma, the slaves will already have the rights to eat and consume truma because of this second person recipient who is now the master, because this first opinion holds that definitely he has acquired the assets, including the slaves already. And since he's the master, it says in the Pasuk, when the kohen will acquire a soul, meaning a slave, which is kinyan kaspa, they're acquired by his money, they get to eat truma because he's the master. So the Tanakhama holds that he has acquired it, even though he protested. He says, no, since this recipient of the gift, who he's the second master, who he's a kayin, he protested. So, Kvar Zoche Ben Yershin, to the contrary, he has not acquired it. The inheritors of the giver has already acquired it. In other words, what he's basically saying is the first person or his inheritors hold on to it. Now, according to Reb Shimon, he doesn't hold, says Rashbam, the halacha of Rish Lakish, which we said in Masechtas Krisis, that if someone's neisim matan lachaveh, if someone gives a gift to his friend and the recipient says, I don't want it, so the recipient doesn't get it, and the giver doesn't, because he already removed himself, but rather kol hamachzik bazachba, that Reb Shimon disagrees with, and he holds that no, the intention was to give it to this recipient. Since if he doesn't want it, then it goes back to the giver, as the Gemara explains this in Masechtas Krisis. However, says Rashbam, the halacha does follow like Rish Lakish. So explains the Gemara this machlokes. Vavinaba, we asked regarding this brisa as follows. The Tanakama, according to Tanakama, who said that the guy wants to give his properties to the person, to the recipient, who he's a kohen. And he says, no, I don't want it. I don't want to have slaves. And said the Tanakama, no, even so, he has acquired it. That's why the slaves can eat the truma. A fellow imivitzavech, even if he's standing and screaming, how could you force someone to take a gift which is detrimental to him? So Amarava, Rava said, Vitim, and some say it was Rabbi Yechon who had said. And that brings us back to this Rabbi Yechon that we had on, that we started off this discussion with, is bitzavach meikara, if he was screaming from the beginning, meaning from the get-go. The kulam alay pligid loikani, says Rabbi Yechon, no, of course. Everyone would agree, including the Tanakama, that the recipient would not acquire it and the slaves would not be his and they would not eat truma. So to the other extreme. Shasak l'b'sev tzaveach, if he was silent at, only at the end he screamed, which those are the two opinions of Rabbi Yechon and Shmuel, which we said they were in disagreement. They were talking about two different cases, the case that we're discussing. If he was originally silent and then he screamed only later, the kulei amalei pligi dekani, then no one would disagree that he has acquired it, because even though he's screaming, now it's too late. You already were silent in the beginning, which was a silent agreement, and therefore it's yours. You can't get rid of it by saying, I don't want it. You would have to do an active thing to get rid of it. So then, key pligi. So then, what is the case that they're disagreeing regarding if he has acquired or not? It's shezichu loy al de'achar. It's the case that we said is this machlokes tanaim, where the giver merited to the recipient through someone else. The shasukul b'slev tzevech, and he was silent when it was given to that person to receive it from him. He saw. He didn't say anything, and he only screamed later when that guy who received it from him says, "Here, it's yours." And says, "No, I don't want it." What's the machlik? Is Tanikama Salva, the Tanikama held Mindishas Kaninu. The fact that he was silent when he saw that this guy's receiving it for him and he didn't protest, he's acquired it. Now that he screams later when the guy who received it from him wants to give it to him, Mahadahu de Kahadabe, he wants to retract. No, you can't retract. It's too late, you already got it. You would have to do something actively, be mafkrit, give it as a gift to someone else. Can't say, I don't want it. He disagrees. He says, no, the end, meaning when he ultimately screams, reveals al-tchilosai regarding the beginning. It helps reflect for us regarding this that we saw in the beginning. It's not that he was agreeable for the gift. Rather, so why didn't he scream up until now? The reason why he was silent was because the sava, he thought, if I didn't receive it yet, my tzavech, what am I going to scream? In other words, it's embarrassing to scream about something that you didn't even get yet. Meaning, you're giving it to him for me? Okay, what does that have to do with me? Now the guy wants to give it to me. Hey, wait a second, I don't want it. So why were you silent in the beginning? Yeah, because I'm going to protest. What with what? It wasn't given to me, even though it was given to him to receive from me. That held Reb Shimon Gamliel, a person would not protest until he gets it, and therefore it wouldn't be a classic case of Shasikol B'Slev Tzaveh, which everyone agrees you're kinda. Because here, Hechich Slev Tchilas, we used to see that, no, I never wanted it in the beginning. I just didn't protest when it was by someone else. I only protested once it came to me. Tarambon, when the Brisa, continue on this, the halachas of gifting, specifically regarding a shchiv merasha amar, regarding a dying person that says. So the reason why we segue now into a dying person and not just by a healthy person is because the halacha that's going to be described is specifically that you could differentiate only by a shchiv merah, by a dying person, regarding what he says, oh, and then after you, achrev leplein, afterwards it should go to someone else, in contrast to a case where he doesn't say that. And the reason for that is because generally a dying person will go ahead and give away all his properties at one time. And therefore, it would make sense, as we're going to see differentiations, how he says it. If he just says it all in one, which would mean no one has precedence, because you just can't say everything in one shot. Or if he says no afterwards to someone else, in contrast to a healthy person, which generally, when he gives away things, it's not all at one time. It's this person now and another person later on. And then you would know who is it that he's being makna to first and who secondary, because that's going to be the discussion, which, and therefore we're specifying regarding a shchimra, where there you would see sometimes as generally when he does it all at one time, in contrast to when he's going to specifically do first you and then you and then you. So says the Brisa, a dying person that says, Tnuma Sayim Zuz L'Plani. Okay, he's passing away, he wants to give away his things. He says, give 200 Zuz to that person. V'shloish Me'ayis L'Plani, give 300 to that person. V'abim Me'ayis L'Plani, and 400 to that person. Now, as Rashbam points out, this Halach of Shchimra would be specifically the case where he doesn't leave over anything for himself. And he's giving away everything because he's dying. Because if he actually would leave over anything for himself, then even if he dies, actually those recipients would not acquire it unless he did an actual kinyan, like a kinyan of sudr, as the Gemara tells us later on, the Kufna Nafim Abayz, where a partial gift of a dying person needs a real kinyan, even if he's going to die. Because if he's holding on to it, obviously he's saying that maybe I'm going to live, which then makes it into Matnas Bari. Matnas Chimra is only if he gives it all away. So we're talking about where he's giving everything away. He says, give 200 to that person, 300, 400 to that person. Says the Braisa, we don't say whoever's first on the document merits first, because he's just giving it all away. You just got to go whatever order it is. But it's not any specific order. Therefore, says the Braisa, if let's say there is produced against this dying person a document of a deed that he owes someone money, either before the recipients got the money or... Actually, the case would then be described if, let's say, the 200 zuz that is given to this person and 300 to that person is not actually money, but it actually feels worth that amount of money. So then actually you could even say this halacha of, even if they really got those fields, still this creditor would be able to collect from them, because it was money, then if they got it ready, he can't collect that mois, which is metal, only karka. So either the money they didn't get did, or even if they got, they receive their gifts, but their land, the halacha is that one who gets a gift from a dying person, his halacha, the Rabbanan establishes like a yerush, like an inheritor, as the Gemara says later on, Perek Mishameis, and the lands of orphans, or anyone that inherits, which we're saying is the recipient of a gift of a Shchimra, is Meshubit, is indebted to the creditors. So either way, the way these two ways of describing the case is the creditor could go ahead and collect from these things. So if a creditor comes to collect, says the Braisa gave him a kulam. So then he could go ahead and collect from all of them, and the reason is because the dying person intended to give to these recipients all at one shot. And as we said, it's just because you can't say two things at once, so one comes before the other. Now, moreover, it's also talking about where he wasn't silent in between the 200, 300, and 400. Because if he was, then actually that would be a sign of changing his mind, as the Gemara tells him later on Perek Mishmei. So he didn't change his mind. He just said 200, 300, 400. He gave it all away. Now that's why it says the Braisa, he collects from all of them, meaning proportionally. The one that he gave less to, the creditor collects less from. The one that he gave more to, he collects more from. Now, so for example, if let's say the creditor comes with a document that he's owed 9 dinar. So he would collect from the one that got 200, 2 dinar. The one who got 300, he would get 3 dinar. And the one who got 400, he would get 4 dinar. Now, the reason why it actually said it in that order, that the first one was got 200, and the second one 300, and the fourth one 400, says Rashbam, is saying actually an added chiddush, because of the seifa, which we're going to learn shortly, that when he says that, and after him the 300, and after him the 400, which the halacha is that actually the last one to get, because he said specifically it should go in that order, is going to lose, even though he obviously, the dying person loves him more than the other ones, because he's giving him a bigger gift than the other ones, doesn't make a difference, because since he's later on, the creditor comes and collects from the last one first. But in this case, we didn't say the achrav, he just gave it all away, it's really at one shot, he collects from all of them. Avol, but says the Braisa, Amar Tunu Masayim Zuz L'Plini, let's say he says like this, says, give 200 Zuz to that person. The achrav L'Plini, and after you give this person, he's already out of the picture, and then there's Nechasim Meshubadim, then there's still Nechasim Necharin, there's still properties that he has, the achrav L'Plini, then give to this person. And the achrav L'Plini afterwards to that person. Oh, then says the Braisa, Oymim Kol HaKoyim Meshtar Zach, then you say whoever is earlier in the document, he merits first. He wanted him first, and then him, and then him. Therefore, if a document of a deed that comes out produced against a dying person, gave him an achron. So it's the last person that he collects from. Because that's the last one who had nechasim necharin. He's the one that took the mishabadim from the Baal Chayv. Now, Einloy, if let's say there's not enough from the last person who was given the amount of the debt, then gaiva, then he collects the excess mishlefana from the one before him. Einloy, if there's not even enough from the previous recipient, gaiva mishlefana, then he goes to the one even before that, and so on, until he collects his entire debt, but he first goes to the last one, and then to the early one. Related halacha, Tana Ban Linda Braisa, Shchiv Marash Ha'amar, a dying person that says, Tnu Masayim Zuz L'Plaini, give 200 Zuz to that person, B'ni B'char, who is my firstborn son, Karoloi, as is appropriate for him. which the Gemara later on tells us that these words karoloi are superfluous, and they specifically were said by the dying person to give strength to the recipient, where he wants to give him these 200 zuz besides his firstborn rights. So therefore it says the Braisa, noitlan, v'noitles b'charasai. He takes the 200 zuz, and he goes ahead and takes his b'char, his portion as the firstborn son. Now, because had the father not said karoloi, then he would actually take them in exchange of his firstborn rights, which, in other words, then the halacha would be, as we're actually going to see in the next halacha, if he doesn't say karoloi, then if he would want to, he would take his firstborn rights. If he would want, he would take the 200 zuz, where, as we're going to say, he has the upper hand to decide which one, but that would be in exchange of one or the other. But here he says karoloi, he takes both. Whereas, as we just mentioned, imama bibchayrasim, let's say he says, give my son these 200 zuz in exchange for his firstborn rights, then yod al-yayna, then the son has the upper hand. Ratza naitlan, if he wants, he could take the 200 zuz, if let's say his firstborn rights are actually less than 200 zuz. Ratza naitlan b'charasa, if he wants, he could go ahead and know and take his firstborn portion if it's more than 200 zuz. Because the father actually cannot diminish the firstborn's rights, even according to Rabbi Yechim Breiko, who he held that a father could switch things around in regard to inheritance, as we learned early in the parak, because of lo yochel levaker. It says that you can't go ahead and switch the rights of the firstborn son. Now, the same thing would be, actually says Rashbam, if the father said, give 200 zuz to any of my sons, and he doesn't say bib b'chayrasi in exchange for his firstborn, that the son would have the upper hand. So why do we say over here bib b'chayrasi? It's actually saying a chiddush, that even though he explicitly said bib b'chayrasi, even so the firstborn could take his firstborn rights if it's more than 200 zuz, because as we said, he has the upper hand. Similar type of a case. A dying person had said, give to these 200 zuz to that woman, my wife, as is according to her. Then, so she takes the 200 zuz in addition to her ksuba. But if he says, give her these 200 zuz for her ksuba, then as you continue, she has the upper hand. Again, as we said, because he can't take away her ksuba rights. But she gets to choose. And so it's a toma where she was not meichel on that, whereas the Bach says in regards to the case when he makes her a partner amongst the children, where then, as the Gemara says in Kaf Lamed Beis, then she would be forgiving on her rights of Iksuba. Here, where she's not Meichel, so then she has the upper hand. Rotzenek Lassen, if she wants, she could take the 200 zuz, let's say if it's more than her Iksuba, or Rotzenek tells Iksuba, if she wants, she could take her Iksuba, if let's say it's more than 200 zuz. A third case, and a dying person that says, give these 200 zuz to that person, my creditor, as according to him, then he takes that in addition to the debt that's owed to him. But if Mama Bachaybi says, give it to him for the debt, then he takes whatever amount it is that's being offered towards the debt that's owed to him. Now, and that Gemara asks on all these three cases, because this dying person said, as is fit for this person, noitlan v'noitles chayvay. So we said that he takes it in addition to what's owed to that person, whether it be the b'chayra, or whether it be the ksuba, or whether it be the debt. But ask the Gemara, b'dimma karola b'chayvay kama. Maybe when he says the words, as is according to him, he means as according to the debt that I owe this person, whether it be the firstborn rights, or whether it be the ksuba, or whether it be the debt. How do we know it means in addition to that, like something more? So Rav Nachman says, Amali Huna told me, Hamani, who is the town of this price? Rabbi Kiva. It's Rabbi Kiva, the Daik Lishneiseri, that he is analyzed the superfluous words, which when there's superfluosity, he's coming to add something, which in these cases is coming to add besides what's owed to that person. It's not like we learned in the Mishnah earlier on the Samach Talmud Alf, which we spoke on Hamaychas Abayas, where someone sells a house, says the Mishnah, but although the house is sold to that person, but v'loya sabar, but the pit that's in the house is not included. V'loya sadus, and neither is the cistern in the house, they're not including the sale of the house. Now, and that's alpha pishakas of le'umkavaruma, that's even if the seller wrote that I'm selling you the house and its height and its depth, it doesn't make a difference because the pit and the cistern are their own utility and they're not considered part of the sale of the house. And specifying the height and the depth only comes to include the actual height and the depth, as the Gemara explains over the Imperka Mechaz Abayis, for what's above the house and what's below that, because generally, a person does not acquire the height and the depth. When he's adding Umkavaruma, he means to add a height and the depth, but that does not include the Bayer Bedus. Now, moreover, says the first opinion, Bitzarach, and this the seller has to be Likuch Loiderach. the seller has to go ahead and purchase for himself a path to get to the pit and the cistern, which he left for himself. As we said, that's not included in the sale of the house. And the reason why that is because this is Divrei Rabbi Akiva, these are the words of Rabbi Akiva, he holds that when someone sells something, he sells it with an ayin yafa, with a generous dispensation, and he doesn't leave over anything, meaning a path even for himself to get to the pit and the cistern that he left for himself. That's Divrei Rabbi Akiva. The Chacham disagree. They say, no, ain't tzarech likach leiderech. He does not have to go ahead and purchase a path for the pit and the cistern that he left over himself, because they hold meicher ba'ayin ru'am meicher. Now, Umayd Rabbi Akiva agrees, Bezman Sha'am Lechutz Me'elu, says the Mishnah over there, if he said, besides for these things, for the pit and the cistern, that Sha'in Tzarech Likach Leiderech, that then he doesn't have to go out and purchase a path to the pit and the cistern that he left over for him. So explains the Gemara, Almo, so we see, Kivin Delayed Tzarech V'Ka'amar, since he didn't have to say these words, Chutz Me'elu, except for the pit and the cistern, because that, as we said, that Evan agrees that generally is not acquired to the consumer when you sell the house. Those are excluded. Oh, but still he said that. Why do you say that? It's anyways not included. That's coming to include something what he's leaving over for himself, which is not only the pit and cistern, which anyways would not have been included. When you're saying, except for the pit and the cistern, well, what are you coming to add? You're coming to add not just the pit and the cistern, but even the path to the pit and the cistern he's intending. So Hachanami says the Gemara, the same concept of Rabbi Akiva, that when you add on superfluous words, comes to include something more, same thing would apply in this price too. Kivin Leit Tzarech V'Ka'amar, since it was not necessary to say Karola, what's that coming to add? And yet he says it. So let's fool you, Milsa, because it's obviously coming to add something more, which we're saying that because, yeah, not only the debt that I owe you, but even this 200 zuz that I'm adding to that too. Now, Rashbam actually says that the Rabbanan, in that Mishnah who disagreed with keeping that halacha over there in the Samach Dalad, they also agree that any superfluous terminology comes to include something more where you could add something, like in the case of our Braisa. This is the Gemara says, Hamani Rabbi Akiva hi, was not specifically that it's only Rabbi Akiva. The same thing our Braisa could be even according to Rabbanan. It's only because we find explicitly in the Mishnah this halacha that we find Rabbi Akiva expounding superfluous terminology, so we say it's like Rabbi Akiva, but it's really like the Rabbanan too. Tanabon Lin, the Brice, again, continuing on the halacha of Shchivim Rasha Amar regarding a dying person that says as follows. Mani Yeshli Eitzel Plain. Generally, we've been always discussing regarding a dying person saying what he wants to give to other people. In this case, a dying person says, I want you to know that people owe me money. Mani Yeshli Eitzel Plain, there's $100, 100 zos that person has of mine by him. Says the Brice, so Eidim Kaisrin. So the witnesses who are there when the person's dying, they write down what they hear as a way of remembering that they say that in front of us, the dying person said that person owes him 100 zuz, and what we heard is what we write and what we signed. Now, says the Brisa, so they could do this, afa pishei makirin, even if they don't recognize the borrower, or even if they don't know if they know who the borrower is, they don't know if he owes this guy who is allegedly the lender as he's dying. Even though they don't recognize, they're allowed to write down what they heard. The fikach, therefore, in other words, because the sages gave the witnesses permission to write down what they hear, even though they don't know for sure if what is being said by the dying person is true or false, so keshu gaiva, when they come to collect, so tzarech, so the orphans have to go ahead and be lehevi raya, they have to bring proof when they want to go ahead and collect from that person. The reason for that is because these witnesses, what they heard from the dying person is all what that they wrote, but they don't know if it's true or not, if there's substance or not. That's the remeir. They disagree. They say, no, ain't kaisrin. The witnesses who are hearing the dying person say this, that this guy owes him money, they're not allowed to write it down. And the reason for this is because we're concerned for what's called a bezdin taya, for an erroneous court, because a later court will see this document that was written by these witnesses, and they're going to think, oh, witnesses would not write down the command of a dying person until they analyzed and they checked first very well, and they know that what he said is true. As Rosh Lakish says in Masech Tzubis Avi Tzim and Aleph, that witnesses do not sign on the document unless they were done by an adult. And also he says over there that witnesses that are signed on the document, it's like as if they already analyzed their testimony in a court. So what we always assume, and a Bezdin Taya, an erroneous court for sure will assume, that whatever is written by witnesses and signed is true. So therefore hold the Chacham that no, you're not allowed to write Elam Kein Makirin, unless they recognize and they know for sure that what this dying person's words are true. Lafikach, therefore, since they only write when they verify it and they know that it's true, kishu gaivu, when the orphans come to collect, ain't tzarech levi raya. they don't have to bring proof. And the reason for that is because the witnesses, according to the Chachamim, only write unless they do recognize. And therefore, the orphans don't have to bring any other proof. All they have to do is validate this document, and they can collect with this document. Now, however, Amar Rav Nachman, he says, Amali Huna, Huna said to me, that Tana actually learned in the Braisa that the Girsa is the other way around. Remeo Aime Inkais, and there's Remeo who said that, no, we don't write, meaning unless they know for sure. V'chacham Aime Inkais, and Chacham said, no, you do write, and we're not concerned for a Bezantai, you write it even though you don't know for sure. Now, moreover, he says, V'af Remeir, and even Remeir, according to the basic halacha, would have agreed to the opinion of the Chachamim to say that they do write, even though they don't know for sure if it's 100% true. And the reason why you would write is because there's no time for the dying person to go ahead and bring the borrower to court. Now, Lo Yamar, he did not say his halacha that you cannot write it unless the witnesses verify it. El, it's only because Remei was concerned Mishum Bezantayin, as we've been explaining, because he's concerned for an erroneous court. Because they're going to think that witnesses would not write unless they recognize and know that this is truth. And they're not going to require the inheritors to bring any proof, which would then be taking away from this person, this alleged borrower, inappropriately. And therefore, Remeir holds that you're not allowed to go ahead and write it unless you know for sure that it's true. Now, Amar Rav Dibi Minadoi, Paskins, Halachas Halacha is, Ein Chayshon Bezantayin, we're not concerned for an erroneous court. Rather, Halacha is like the way Rav Nachman said according to Rabbanan, that they could write what they hear from the dying person, even though they don't recognize what he's saying for sure is the truth. Now, this halacha of Rav Dimi, that is the way he paskins, asks the Gemara, Umayshna Medirava. But why is it any different than Rava's halacha? Because the Amar Rava said that in Chaltzin, when there's a Yavam and a Yavama, meaning if a person died without any children, so halacha is that his wife has to have Yibim or Chalitza from his brother. So when there's a Yavam and a Yavama that come in front of us to do Chalitza, and we don't know for sure that this is our brother-in-law and the sister-in-law, that he's the Yavam and she's the Yavama. So the halacha is that the court does not go ahead and proceed with doing the chalitza process. As the Gemara will explain shortly, the reason is because we're concerned for a Bez Nantaya. Because if it's going to happen that she's going to come to get married in another court by saying, hey, look, I got chalitza from this first court, obviously I'm already divorced, I'm already done with any obligations that I have with my previous marriage. But it's actually that the first court doesn't know if that was for sure her yavim. The second court that's going to see, hey, she has a chalitza, obviously she should get married. They're going to make the mistake and go ahead and marry her off and not realize that the first court did not verify and know for a fact that this is the yavama. And they're not going to know that the halacha is that you could do chalitza, really, even if you don't recognize that this is a yavim and yavama. So therefore, actually, they instituted that, no, you cannot do chalitza, elam kemakirin, unless you recognize that this is the yavam and the yavama. Now, so too, you could say the same type of halacha is that ve'ema mainan. The same takana was that a court does not proceed with the miyun procession, which is when there's a minor who wants to just walk out of a marriage, which was rabbinically done by her mother and her brothers, which she has the ability to just walk out, that you cannot do the miyun elam kemakirin, unless they recognize both the husband and the wife for the same reason, because she's going to go ahead and get married somewhere else if she never did a real miyun, because it wasn't really with her husband, it was some other person. We don't know for a fact that that's the husband. So, says Rava, Lafikach, therefore, since we don't do chalitza unless they first recognize that this is the Yavam and the Yavama, so the halacha is kaisman, so witnesses that are just happen to be there at the proceedings, they could write get chalitza v'get miyun. They could write a document verifying that they witnessed the chalitza process and the miyun process to permit her, v'avapishe makirin. And even if the witnesses don't know what really for sure that this is the Yavam and the Yavama. The reason for this is because since the court that's doing the procession, they for sure recognize when they do Chalitza or the Mian, as we said, because they cannot do it unless they know for a fact. So therefore, when witnesses are writing down and they say that we saw that there was Chalitza and Mian done by that person, from that person, even if they don't write Vishtamaydina and we were notified that these are the right people, the woman would be able to get married with this witness, with this testimony that was written down by these Edim. And says the Gemara. So explaining Rava's halacha. Now, my time, what's the reason that Rava said that you cannot do Chalitza unless you first recognize that this is the Yavam and the Yavama? Because the Chayshin Lebezin Toyin is because we're concerned for a court that would make a mistake, as we explained. Because if you would say that the first court could do Chalitza, even if they don't recognize that this is Yavam Yavama, so the second court that the woman would go to say, hey, I want to get married. Married? How do we know you're not, that we know you were married once? They say, look, I had Chalitza done. They're going to think, oh, wait a second, the first court would not have done Chalitza unless they recognize, and because they would make a mistake and they don't know that the halacha is that you could do Chalitza. The court can do chalitza even without, if they don't know if it's the right yavam niyavama. So therefore, we see that Rabba held that we are concerned for bezin tayin. So therefore, the question is, and then same thing in our context, we should be concerned for bezin tayin, and we should say that you're not allowed to write that what you heard from the dying person, unless you know for sure, because we have to be concerned for bezin tayin, who later on are going to say, hey, this guy for sure owes this money because the witnesses wrote it. Which is like Remeir, how is it that he paskins like Drabbanan if we see the Rabba paskins otherwise? Says Igmar Lloyd, no, it's not contradicted by Rabba's halacha. Bezdin Basr Beis Din Eloy Daiki. It's when there's a court that comes after a first court, that's when the second court doesn't analyze so much. In other words, by Chalitza Emin, which was Rabba's halacha, the reason why the Rabba said that they instituted that you cannot do Chalitza unless the court first recognizes the Yavam Niyavama, is because if you would say that you the first court could do Chalitza even though they don't recognize, there for sure, yes, we would be concerned for a subsequent court that would make the mistake, and the second court would say, oh, there must have been a court of rabbis, of three judges, for sure they recognized when they did the Chalitza. And therefore, the second court, after the first court, would not analyze it as when there's a doctor that gives it to another doctor. It just assumes that the first one had said, sometimes could be that truth, and you go based on that the prior diagnosis. The same thing is over here, where you're going based on the professionals, the first ones, you assume that since Chalitza Min has to be done with three judges, as the Mishnah says in Masechtas Nedarim, Bezim and Aleph, so then, that the halacha would be that the second court would assume that the first chalitza was a halachic chalitza. Now, however, but that's only in Rabba's case. But Beis Din Basa Eidim Daiki. But a court, when it comes subsequent to witnesses, that then they do analyze, which is like in our case that we're describing regarding the command of a dying person, they were not concerned, and that's the way Rav Dimi had Paskin, not contradicted by Rav Salacha, that we're not concerned for the court making a mistake. To say that, oh, if witnesses signed, it must have been that they recognized it. No, they would analyze subsequent to the witnesses if they did know or not. And therefore, the halacha is the way Rav Dimi had said that we're not concerned for a bezin tayin, in contrast to Rav's halacha, which is not a contradiction. That was after a court. There, they're not going to analyze, and there we are concerned for a bezin tayin. Now the Gemara continues with the next Mishnah, continuing on the theme of the previous Mishnah regarding the halacha of akeis and nechas of lebnoi la'achar ma'isu. We said regarding if a father writes over his property to his son after that he dies, which we explained the halacha is coming to tell us that the actual body of that property is acquired to the son from today, but the peiri, the produce, the utility of it is only given to the son after the father passes away. So therefore, based on that halacha, Mishnah says as follows: Ha'av teilish umachal. The father could detach the produce as long as he's alive, and he could go ahead and give it to feed, to eat, to whoever he wants to. Now, because, however, whatever the father leaves when he dies that's still attached to the ground, then, even if it's ready to be detached, then actually that would belong to his son who he gave over his properties to as a gift. Now, that halacha is specifically, as we're going to see, regarding a son. But when someone writes over his properties to a random person, even what he leaves over that's still attached to the ground at the time that he dies belonged to his Yershin, and the reason for that is, as the Gemara will explain, is because a person is more endeared to his son more than a random person, and therefore he comes to include more than what's usually. But the halacha is that during his lifetime he can detach and give over to whoever he wants to. Oh, Masha Niach Talish, and whatever he leaves over when he dies that's already detached, the Harei Shal Yershim, that goes to his inheritors and not to the recipient himself. It's only what's attached to the ground that when he passes away, as we said in contrast to a random person, where actually even when it's attached, it's not going to go to that recipient, but by the son, that if it's attached, and for sure the land itself, will then go to the son after he passes away. Now the Gemara asks and explains, as we just mentioned in passing. The Gemara says that the Mishnah had said talish, what he left after he passed away from this field that was already detached, so that in. Then we said, yes, that goes to the inheritors, and doesn't go only to that son that he gave over his properties to. But, mechubur, what's still attached to the ground, So then, loy. Then we said that no, then it's going to go only to the recipient of the gift, to that one child, because that would consider like the land itself, and that he acquired to the child to get it after he passes away. On that, as the Gemara to continue top of Kof Lama Tesam and Al, but Latanya learned the Brais, and this is a Tesefta, that's Tort Mestefta Ksubis, regarding when a son sells, and then its father dies. So then the Brais says that if in the properties there are produce that's attached to the ground, so then that's what we're going to explain this halacha, the brisa that we evaluated. In other words, the brisa was talking about over there, if someone writes over all his properties to his son, exactly the case that we're describing in our Mishnah. So the halacha is that he has to write, Mehayim alacha misa, that I'm giving it to you from today, and after I die, which as we explained, that what that means to say is, if someone writes over all his properties to his son from today until after I die, so that means to say that the land belongs to the son already now, but the produce is the father's until he passed away. So the Bryce is discussing a case where then the son goes and he sells those properties when his father's still alive. And then at a later point in time, his father dies. So the halacha is that the one who bought it from the son merits from what the son sold him in the actual body of the land itself. So on that, the Bryce is describing, if in those nechasim there are attached produce when the father passed away, says the Bryce that the consumer only merits in the body of the property itself. But regarding the produce, even if it's still attached to the ground, goes to the inheritors, not to that recipient of the gift. And therefore, says the Braisa, Shaman Esamuchubaran Lekech, we have to evaluate what's attached to the ground regarding the consumer, that we evaluate that, and he has to give that value to the inheritors because he's not getting even the peris that's attached to the ground, he only gets the ground itself. So that contradicts what we just said. Does the recipient of a gift, which is going to take effect after he dies, get only the land as we see in this Braisa, or as we said in our Mishnah, that he gets not only the land, but what's also attached to the ground itself? He's not going to get what's detached, but it seems like that you should get what's even attached to. So there seems to be a contradiction in our Mishnah in this Braisa. Amauli says, like Kash, it's not a difficulty, as we already alluded to this in the Mishnah. Khan in our Mishnah is Toma Bibinai, where the father wrote over all his properties to his son. And the son didn't sell it to anyone else while his father was still alive. Where there, the intention of the father is very close and endeared to his son, as the Gemara is going to shortly explain this concept, where it was with that intention that he acquired it to the son, that it should take effect after that he dies, even for the produce that's attached to the ground. Where he wants him to have the whole body of the land itself. And it was not with the intention that it should go to anyone else that when he's still alive. Or actually, Rashbam gives a different interpretation, that even if the son did sell it to someone else, but the son is not selling to the lekech, who's a different person, anything more than the body itself, and not the peiros, even though that's attached to the ground. But kamba achar, the Brais is talking about when the son sold it to someone else when the father is still alive. Or the same thing would apply if the father himself writes over all his properties to someone else, Mayom Alachamisa, where then we say that that other person does not get a portion in what's even the peiros that's attached to the ground, it only gets the ground itself. What's the reason for this discrepancy? Because a person, his thoughts are very close to his son. So when he's writing all of his properties to his son to take effect after he dies, that's not only the ground, that's the peiros that's attached to it, as we said in our Mishnah. In contrast to the Braisa, that's saying that the recipient of Mahayim Alachamisa only gets the body, and even the peiros that's attached to the ground, he does not get, that has to be evaluated and given to the inheritors of the giver of the gift. That's a random person who's not related. There, the giver is only going to give the land itself, and not the peiros HaMechubaron LaKarka.